Welcome to Season 2 of The Voice Behind the Pen, hosted by author and screenwriter S.C. Dickens. Before we move into this new season, we'd like to thank everyone for tuning in, following, subscribing, rating, and sharing Season 1. Keep sending in your feedback as it helps us get better at delivering a quality show for you all to enjoy. A special thanks to all of the guests from Season 1, Freeze, Tony Hale III, Mark Six Mitchell, Empress Rolanda, William Young, Keith Lakeen Powell, Victor L. Martin, John Alexander, Brianna Cole, and Marcus Massey. Thank you all for coming on and sharing your expertise, mindset, and wisdom. If you'd like to be a guest on the show, send SC an email via the email link at www.theauthorscdickens.com. While you're on the site, be sure to check out SC's ghostwriting services and other works on the store page. If you'd like to advertise on the show, or you'd like production work for any of your projects, send me an email at faxtheproducer@gmail.com. That's fax with a Z. So, as usual, kick back, grab whatever your go-to is to let loose, and please enjoy the show.
Welcome to the Voice Behind the Pen podcast. I'm your host, author, and screenwriter, S.C. Dickens. Tonight, we will be diving into the minds of today's most intriguing author with our special guest, William Waite, the mastermind behind the captivating novel, The Ingenue. William's journey as an author is inspiring. Beyond his lore of vampires, his immersed software development, martial arts, and bass guitar playing, his unique blend of interests influences his writing with dynamic storytelling. Join us as we explore the backstory behind his prolific novel, The Ingenue. Without any further ado, let's welcome our guest. Good evening, William. How you doing, man?
I'm doing great. How about you?
I'm doing great, my brother. I can't complain.
It's very good to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
I want to thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Thanks so much.
All right. So, you know, on Mondays, I interview an author, and on Wednesdays, I interview someone in the film industry. And with today being Monday, I wanted to ask you a couple of questions about your book. All right?
Absolutely. Let's do this.
So my first question is, what inspired you to write your first novel?
So in an odd way, my first job did. I spent a lot of time commuting from my house to the office, and along the way, I found this house that looked like a very sad house, is the best way to describe it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with this house, but it was just like this little one-story house out in the middle of nowhere, and it was just this kind of sad farmhouse. It had a very large, I think, oak tree in the front yard, and I started trying to figure out who lived in this house, not actually figure out who lived in this house, but just, you know, making up a story in my head about who lived in this house. And obviously it had to be a vampire because, you know, that's what I've been writing about since I was a kid, basically. And from that, I came up with a villain and I tried to figure out why this villain lived in such a sad house. And I realized she was going to be the saddest vampire in the world. And that was basically how I got started writing the entire book.
Okay. So what sets your portrayal of vampires apart from others' descriptions in literature?
Mine are more of a throwback vampire. Back in Bram Stoker's day, vampires were kind of scary enough in the shadows on their own, and it seems like more modern vampires either go the route of the over-romanticized vampires or the over-aggressive vampires, where over-romanticized are, you know, fairly, I don't know, you can't necessarily take them seriously sometimes, and the over-aggressive ones, they're fairly two-dimensional sometimes, and I wasn't really interested in either flavor. I like the old-school Dracula kind, and that's what I'm kind of aiming for in my depiction of vampires. I want a monster who's scarier in the shadows than he is just all up in your face. And there are definitely elements of romance and elements of, you know, violence and aggression as well, but it's trying to keep the vampires more in the shadows versus just coming to get you or just kind of your dark Valentine date.
Okay.
Do you draw inspiration from real life experiences when crafting your characters and the relationships?
I definitely do, but I have made it a rule to not put myself or my own... I don't base characters off of people I know. I don't base characters off of myself. I don't do that. I've seen enough authors do it that it sometimes feels like easy mode, and so I've tried to do the exact opposite in this. The characters are not based on real people in the slightest. But I do know that there's a lot of media that has inspired me. Even now, I'll still be watching some old movie or reading some old book that I haven't looked at in 10 or 20 years or something, and I'll be like, oh my gosh, that's where I got that sentence from. That's what inspired that one sentence in my book. So it's definitely a lot of media that inspires me, which I guess in a sense is real world experiences. But I definitely don't want actual people to be portrayed in this. It's definitely a work of fiction.
Okay. What challenges do you face while writing the Ingenue and how did you overcome them?
The biggest challenge that I found is trying to carve out free time. And in trying to get that book written, what I finally did is I made a New Year's resolution to myself. I first had a good talking to with myself, and I said, self, if you're actually a writer, you got to write at least one chapter a month, because otherwise, if you can't write that, then you're just faking it. And after I made that resolution, I then also made a resolution that I had to put aside all of my other creative projects, because I have a bunch that I dabble in, from software projects to poetry projects to just home improvement projects, whatever it is. But I put aside all the projects until I got that book written. And honestly, it did end up averaging, just based on my personal hurdles that I had to go through, just the regular day-to-day stuff that I had to juggle. It did end up averaging just one chapter a month, roughly. And so we're talking a course of maybe 2.5 years that it took me to write the book. I'm sure that's very slow by most very popular writer standards. Most authors can kick out a book in like 6 months. Heck, the NaNoWriMo crowd can kick out a novel in 30 days. That's not me. But that was the biggest hurdle, just trying to find the time that ultimately I had to carve out in writing this.
Okay. How do you handle the balance between writing for pleasure and writing for profit?
Well, I'm hoping to not have to make that distinction. I don't do much in the way of writing that's not... anything I write, I want to sell, publish. I only write in that context. For my own day job, I don't do anything of writing. I'm not writing papers or anything along those lines. So basically, what I'm hoping for is that everything I write that someday will end up in a publishing house.
Okay. Are there any particular authors or books that have influenced your writing style or storytelling techniques?
Yes. The number one would be Stephen Brust, and in particular his book Agyar. I still say, hands down, it's the best vampire novel that's ever been written, better than mine. So, you know, even if you're going to read my book, you probably want to read his first, because it's just so good. The thing I love about that book so much is that he never uses the V word, vampire, in the entire book. It's just so well written, and his vampires are definitely in the shadows. They're not all up in your face. Such a great novelist in general, and he always, in all of his books, he tries to put himself out there and try a different approach with the novels and the characters, and he never does the same thing twice. Another one that was really inspiring to me was Threshold by Caitlin R. Kiernan. It's a psychological book that they had Barnes & Noble basically tricked into calling it a fantasy novel, and it's really not a fantasy novel. It's really a psychological novel. But it's an interesting take on human psychology, in particular on schizophrenia, that it's just very vividly engrossed me, and it influenced the writing style that I chose for the entirety of the Ingenue. And of course, the other book that inspired me is Dracula, because, you know, that's what vampires are supposed to be a nod toward.
Okay. Can you discuss the significance of the title, The Ingenue, and how it reflects the theme of your novel?
So in opera, the ingenue is a character that is supposed to be rescued. It's an archetype, and it's usually a female character, usually a young woman, maybe always a young woman. And the idea is that she needs to be rescued. And the ingenue herself in opera is not She doesn't matter to the story. She's a device by which the story progresses. And that basically is really sums up the ingenue of my story. She's not actually, in a sense, even relevant in this book. She's the thing that gets everything going. And then beyond that, you see what impact she had on the people around her. So the book isn't even actually about her any more than the ingenue is in opera, the main character. What's interesting, too, is that the flip side of the ingenue in that archetype is the vampire, which is another archetype. And so that seems to suit the theme pretty well.
Okay. What does the role music play in your creative process?
I don't think I'm ever writing if I'm not listening to music, unless I'm stuck somewhere weird, like, I don't know, an airport. But even then, I probably have headphones. But I'm pretty much always listening to music. I have different playlists for the different creative projects that I'm working on, since now I'm allowed to multitask since I finished writing my novel. So, but I had a particular playlist that I used for the ingenue, and I tried to only listen to it when I was writing for the ingenue to try to, you know, like, get the creative juices flowing. Same thing for the project I'm working on right now. I'm working on two different sequels simultaneously, and I do listen to different playlists for those books, and it's probably the number one sensory stimuli to get me writing properly and to get my creative power going.
Okay. So I was reading in your bio that you do martial arts.
Yeah, it has definitely been a hot minute since I've done so. When I got my black belt, I ended up taking a sort of leave of absence, and I kind of never quite got back into it. I desperately miss it. I'm not sure if I'm ever going to actually go back to a dojo or not. It would be nice. There's always that trade-off of the real world versus, you know, your private pursuits, and I don't know if I could actually squeeze into my schedule anymore, but I'm definitely very happy that I participated in martial arts for as long as I did. And another thing is that it did actually influence my writing. There are a few action fight scenes in the ingenue that I based on martial arts experience to try to give it a sense of realism and to make sure that the blocking actually made sense.
Okay, because I was going to ask you, how do you maintain authenticity when you're depicting martial arts in your writing? I kind of figured most people that who fight or, you know, participate, when they do it, they know how to make it make sense, you know, so I wanted to see how that worked. So I appreciate you for answering that.
Yeah, I don't know if I could have actually written the fight scenes without that experience. And I mean, obviously, I got a lot more out of martial arts than just simply inspiration for writing. That's not why I took martial arts, but it definitely was advantageous and factored into my writing a lot.
Okay. Are there any specific challenges or adventures to writing within the vampire genre?
It's definitely, I don't know, I'm always trying to figure out, think in my head, am I just writing the same old that everyone else is doing? And I have to keep reminding myself that pretty much everything has already been done before. And so I just have to keep moving forward with my vision of the vampires. I know that there are other authors out there who try to come up with new takes. I know that there's a particular popular series right now that's a science fiction series about vampires where vampirism, it's a virus and all that. And so I know that a lot of people read that series specifically to see the mechanics of it. But that's one of the things that I hope to avoid in this. I don't want people to be interested in the mechanics of vampires in my book. I want them to be sort of predictable in that sense, because otherwise the vampirism itself is the focus of the book, and that's not really what I'm aiming for. I want it to be more Dracula style, where you see the impact that this has on the lives of the people who are involved versus what happens if a vampire does this and what happens if a vampire does that.
Okay. Do you have any favorite scenes or moments in your book that are special to you?
Yes, absolutely. I have lots. A lot of them, they are based on particular, moments that, well, for example, I was writing a scene early on in the book where a character is picking a lock, And I remember that day that my children were younger at the time, and they wanted to go to the mall. And so I said to them, let me just finish writing the scene, and then, you know, I'll take you to the mall. And, you know, children don't necessarily have as much patience as, you know, at that age as any adult might like. And so, you know, they start pestering me a bit. And there I am, like, I have the writing muse inspiring me in that moment. And there I am saying, just five more minutes. And, you know, the chorus of, but I want to get them all now type thing. And I remember in my frustration, I ended up having my character get distracted while picking the lock. Because, you know, I was distracted, so I was like, you know what, I'm going to have my character get distracted while picking the lock, and she therefore almost breaks her lock pick in the process, and it was the same sort of thing that I almost lost my inspiration and lost that whole scene right there. So little things like that, when I look back at it, you know, it just makes me laugh, thinking, yeah, I remember that. I remember exactly how much my kids wanted to go to the mall and how that actually is now sort of in a little time capsule that's embedded in my book. But yeah, there are definitely a lot of little scenes like that that are just so important to me and make me smile when I read through them again.
Okay. How do you handle criticism and feedback from readers or editors?
Oh, I welcome it. I remember my my favorite negative comment that I ever got, a woman left a review saying, it's just a book about a bunch of redheaded vampires, and it just made me laugh so much because it's not exactly how I'd summarize the plot, but it's like, okay, you know, I'll take it. Sure, let's go with that. I don't know. So I really generally do welcome criticism. My mentor, well, he gets embarrassed when I call him my mentor, but whatever. The guy who kept me going, as I guess I should say, while I was writing, he was the head of my writers group. He was lobbing criticisms in a good way at me throughout the course of writing this. And he was the one who impressed upon me the importance of every chapter having conflict, not just a book, but every chapter has to have conflict. And so it's because of that that I ended up rewriting a lot of sections of the book to try to bump up the conflict in each section. So yeah, I definitely welcome criticism of all kinds, be it, you know, spurious, because honestly it makes me giggle, or be it actually like in-depth, deep sort of, yeah, you know, your book will be much better if you do this instead. Everybody loves hearing that their writing is great. And obviously, yeah, you know, when I have people say, gosh, that's so good, you know, yes, it makes you feel better about yourself and your writing. But I just as much am appreciative of people who are like, yeah, why don't you do this differently or whatever. But yeah, I'm definitely appreciative of all sorts of criticism. It makes me a better writer. And whether it's from mentors or people who like the book and tell you it's good, or people who don't like the book and, you know, tell you what you can improve or anything like that, it's definitely always helpful to me.
Okay. Can you discuss the process of finding the right publisher?
So that's an interesting process overall. I know that writers have a long road on that one. The general approach these days is that you need to find you probably have to find a writer's agent is the way it works. There are a lot of tools by which you can find writer's agents. The one I end up using is a book from Barnes & Noble. I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head, but basically it's a listing of all the writer's agents for the current year. Anyone can just go to Barnes & Noble and buy a copy of this for the current year. You have to probably get an updated one each year though, because, you know, people go in and out of the business very quickly. Contacting publishers directly is often not going to work. So I highly recommend finding a writer's agent and pursuing it from that direction. There are some publishing houses, independent ones, that are another good approach. And I could definitely recommend some of those that I had better experiences with. But that's the general process. Either find a writer's agent or find a small indie publisher, or get super lucky and find a connection at a larger publishing house.
Okay. What kind of research did you conduct regarding the vampire's lair or things that they're allergic to? Or, you know, we know the typical silver bullet, you know, what other did you do?
So the research was really important to me. I mentioned the martial arts factor, and that was just one of the examples. A lot of locations, I actually went there in person in Cincinnati to scope them out. There's a particular location in the first chapter of the Ingenue that I spent a lot of time walking around the outside of it to try to get a better impression of what it looked like. It's an abandoned place, so it's not like I was, you know, hanging around at somebody's house or something like that. But authenticity and research is very important to me. I got to the point, I had to, I guess maybe you could add that to one of the challenges I was facing, that the pursuit of authenticity does sometimes impede my writing. That I'll try to research things such as, well, what time was sunset on that particular day in that particular year, because that will factor into whether or not vampires are walking around or if they're going to be bursting in flames or whatever. And so, yeah, I did a lot of research along all those lines. A lot of the times I would find myself spending so much research for just one sentence of my book. I remember one time I spent 4 hours of research on what sort of clothing people would be wearing in the late 18th century in order to write one sentence of a book that I was working on, one of the sequels to this, I guess I should say. So yeah, I've definitely done a lot of research, and I think every writer should. I think it'll make your writing better, but just don't fall into the trap of being paralyzed by your authenticity. It's okay to be fictional occasionally.
Okay. How do you approach creative tension and suspense in your novels?
I guess I try to put myself in that position and be like, what would scare a real person right now? A lot of the times you can just get that feeling in your gut of when you're on the right track with regard to suspense. It's like, oh yeah, I got it right here. A lot of that too, you'll find that just if you have other people read it and give you their opinions on it, that's another way of finding out if it's actually suspenseful, if you're overthinking it, if you're underthinking it. Not just suspense, but even things like humor. There are definitely parts of my book with that I would show it to somebody and I'd be like, what do you think of this? And they'd be like, that's really funny right there. And I'd be like, oh, okay, I was kind of hoping that would be a little bit funny. And so, yeah, it's definitely important to have a good group of beta readers and friends who can give you feedback and tell you how it's going.
Okay. Now, I know you mentioned some authors that inspired you. Would they be the same authors that you would want to collaborate with collaboration being huge nowadays between authors? Or do you have any other writers that you would like to collaborate with if you could?
I mean, the authors that I named, well, of course, Bram Stoker's, you know, very dead, so that's a different subject. But Stephen Brust and Caitlin McKiernan, oh my gosh, what I wouldn't give to just get a beer with them, let alone collaborate with them. So yeah, absolutely. I actually used to have some conversations with authors. I still occasionally, there are some authors that I have connections with on social media. And I'm actually genuinely honored. So basically the way I see authors, the way a lot of people see movie stars, that when I meet them, I turn into a babbling idiot where I can't even focus correctly, where I get starstruck, where I'm trying to ask for an autograph without super embarrassing myself. So yes, it's a long-winded way of answering your question. I would love to collaborate with any of these people. I'd be hugely honored.
Okay. Can you share any details about your upcoming projects or future plans as an author?
Yes, I'm working on two sequels right now to The Ingenue. Originally, I was writing one that I was going to be the, you know, first sequel. As I was writing it, though, some of the people from my original writers meetup couldn't necessarily relate to it. They wanted something that felt more of the same to them, in a sense, and I could totally appreciate that. I didn't feel like I didn't quite have enough intellectual property to write a completely different sequel first, and so I took a break from that project, which will now be the third book in the series eventually, to write what is now going to be the second book in the series. It's a much more faithful sequel to The Ingenue, and that's the project I'm working on now. I have a bunch of other ideas in mind to write about, not just about vampires, but I think pretty much all of it is speculative fiction, but once again, it does come down to a matter of prioritizing what I'm going to work on and what should come next.
Okay. Is there any genre of writing that you would stay away from? And if so, why?
I don't have any interest in nonfiction, but that's not really a genre, I guess. No, I don't think so. When I was trying to figure out how to get published, I was actually going to try to style my writing. I was going to try to approach genres just because of their popularity. And I was considering genres such as romance and Christian fiction and just a bunch of genres that I knew were hotter at the time. And so, no, I don't think there's anything that I would not touch. I mean, my my bread and butter is speculative fiction. I just love it so much. But yeah, I'd try anything twice.
Okay. With so many writers suffering from writer's block, how do you stay motivated and disciplined during the moments of writing that you don't feel like writing?
So, yeah, that's a really interesting question, actually. So I come from a very scientific background just because of who I am and also the industry that I work in for my day job. And so my problem when I was writing was in trying to get creative at all. And that sort of, in a sense, goes hand in hand with writer's block. So what I had to do to approach that, there's a particular methodology that I started using. And the person who came up with this idea, she's an author named Elizabeth George. She's a very popular mystery writer, actually. She has a book out there called Right Away, in which she describes her process that I can't recommend highly enough to similarly scientific, analytical people. Basically, cutting it short, though, is that her process has you outline everything out first before you do much writing at all, by which there's a much lower chance then of running into writer's block. And that's the approach that I've been following. It really works for me. But this whole style doesn't work for everyone because a lot of people choose the approach of just like kind of, you know, start on page one and keep writing till you get to page 300. And that's their approach for writing, in which case, you know, I guess I can't recommend this approach. For people like that, I guess I would say follow the NaNoWriMo approach. Just get stuff down on paper as fast as you can. Force yourself to write, you know, like the 1,600 words a day until you have a completed piece. And then after that, a lot of the writer's block does come from self-editing, be it actually on paper where you're like, oh, this is no good, or just in your head where you're like, oh, this is no good. So I think the more people can just brainstorm from that approach, that's how you can get around writer's block.
Okay. So my next question is this. I know a lot of writers critique their work as they go through. How do you prevent yourself from critiquing your work so much that you get stuck in one area and keep going back because you didn't like how it was worded?
Well, I'm going to give you a very unpopular answer. I don't. I do exactly that. that's exactly my approach. The nice thing is that then when I get to the end of my piece, I don't have to do much editing at all. But this is not a process I would recommend for everyone. For most people, they probably would look at me and be like, you know, William, you're crazy. But that's exactly what I do. I do over edit everything as I'm writing it, basically. So I have a tablet. It's called a Remarkable. It's a pen and paper tablet. And I actually write my pieces by hand, just old school, as if I'm writing on paper. It is digital, so I don't lose them. So my papers don't end up, you know, catching on fire or being flushed down a toilet or whatever, anything like that. But I am basically handwriting my pieces, after which, after I have some amount of pages, 5-10 pages, a chapter, whatever I feel is a good amount, I then type it up. And that's when I'm doing my editing. Combining that with my process of outlining everything up front, it does bring me to what I do find myself actually over-editing everything, hyper-focusing on my word choices. And I know it's probably a process that'll drive like every other writer nuts, but that's actually what I do. For anyone else, though, I guess I would say just do not allow yourself in the slightest to edit while you're writing. For anyone else, I would say, you know, just trust the fact that when you finally pitch this to your group of friends and everything, that you'll probably get an editor who can do all this work for you, potentially even, and just do not worry about it right now. Just don't even allow yourself to use an eraser or a backspace key while you're writing.
Okay. If you could offer one piece of advice to the younger self when you were starting writing your journey, what would it be?
Promise myself to write 2 chapters a month. Because then I would have twice as much done by now, and I probably could have pulled it off. You know, like I said, I made the New Year's resolution to write one chapter a month, and that is exactly all I did. And so in retrospect, if I could have actually said, you know what, I'm going to write two chapters a month, I probably could have tackled that too, and then I'd have two sequels, or two books by now.
Okay. And lastly, where can people find your books?
So the easiest way is to go to the publisher website, which is just newfangle.press, newfangle.press, P-R-E-S-S. And there's a catalog page there. And from there, then, whatever version you want to find is available. There's a link to the Kindle version. There's also a paperback version, and there's a hardcover version as well.
Okay.
Oh, there's also an Audible version, an audiobook that's available from there as well, which is also linked.
Okay. Well, William, I thank you for coming on the show again. I appreciate you taking your time out of your busy schedule and gracing us this evening.
Thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's another episode of Voice Behind the Pen. And I want to wish everybody a good night. Good night, everybody.